You're listening to the Monetary Blog from the FOMC Insight Engine. This is The Pillars, a restorationist program, its architecture, and the two readings of how it arrived. On April 21st, 2026, Kevin Warsh sat for confirmation as chair of the Federal Reserve. The hearing ran 2.5 hours. The word independence was spoken 34 times, by senators asking whether it would hold, and by the nominee insisting it would. The questioning was mostly political. What the hearing produced, underneath the politics, was something harder than the hearing format usually permits, a program. Reading across Warsh's substantive responses, well over 100 distinct claims, stated and restated across 2.5 hours under adversarial and friendly questioning, the claims do not distribute as positions, they aggregate. Cluster by cluster, they compress into a smaller set of doctrinal commitments, which compress again into 4 operational pillars, a chair's qualification, and a framing premise. Improvised positions do not aggregate this way. Prepared programs do. The framing premise. Underneath Warsh's 4 operational pillars sits a normative claim that licenses the rest. The Fed's authority is conditional on its performance of a narrow mandate. From the Kevin Warsh, Fed independence is up to the Fed. That has 3 implications. First, Congress is tasked with the mission to ensure price stability. Inflation is the Fed's choice. Second, Fed independence is at its peak in the conduct of monetary policy. And third, the Fed must stay in its lane. Stated this way, the claim is unremarkable. Every central banker says performance matters. What makes Warsh's version distinctive is the direction of the conditionality. Independence is not granted by statute and then measured against performance. Independence is produced by performance, earned when the Fed delivers on the mandate Congress assigned it, forfeited when the Fed drifts. From the Kevin Warsh, independence has to be earned, and it is earned by delivering on the promises, the commitment the Fed has made. And if the Fed hasn't delivered on its promises, we shouldn't be surprised that we hear politics entering the room at the Fed. The conventional framing inverts this. The statutory protection, tenure, removal for cause, insulation from the executive, is what produces the independence. Performance is what the independence is used for. Warsh's version makes performance the source, protection the consequence. When the Fed delivers, protection obtains. When the Fed fails, the protection is at risk regardless of the statute. This is the normative flaw. The 4 operational pillars stand on it. The 4 pillars. Each pillar has the same 3-part shape: the right outcome, what occurred, the cause of the departure. They are the compression of the program Warsh delivered. Recognize. The right analytical posture toward a regime-changing supply shock would be to revise the Fed's models of potential output, productivity, and the natural rate, and to reconsider the appropriate policy path in light of rising supply capacity. What current doctrine does, in Warsh's reading, is treat artificial intelligence as incremental technology adoption, another productivity nudge absorbed into the existing framework, rather than as a phase transition. From the Kevin Warsh, this is the most disruptive moment in modern economic history in the US and the world. Warsh's characterization places AI comparable in scale to the late 1970s transition. The implication is consequential. If AI is delivering a meaningful increase in potential output, the Fed can accommodate rate reductions without sacrificing price stability, because the supply side is running faster than demand. If AI is incremental, rate reductions under above-target inflation are a policy error in the making. Warsh's claim is that the Fed's current models cannot tell the difference because they were built for the Great Moderation era, in which supply-side shocks of this magnitude were not parameterized.
The restoration requires model revision, investment in productivity measurement, and a willingness to update the framework as evidence accumulates. This is the most forward-looking of the 4 pillars. Warsh's AI claim is still empirical and not yet settled. In the doctrine, it functions less as a proven fact than as a demand that the Fed revise what it knows how to measure. It is also the pillar that, if adopted, licenses the rate path the current administration has publicly demanded. The analytical claim is Warsh's. The rate implication is convenient for the appointer. Repair. The right outcome would have been inflation near target and stable enough that no one is talking about prices. Warsh's preferred definition of price stability, older than the 2% regime. What occurred was cumulative price increases of 25 to 35% across all income deciles over 4 years, a sustained departure from the mandate. The departure, in Warsh's account, was caused by three specific mechanisms. The 2020 longer-run goals statement rewrote the Fed's reaction function to pursue periods of moderate overshoot following periods of undershoot. Warsh's framing of what followed is direct. From the Kevin Warsh, inflation was running at 1.72%, and the Fed changed its framework, rewrote in some sense the remit you gave it, and they asked for a little more inflation. They ended up with a lot more, and that built a foundation for the inflation surge that happened in subsequent years, which we are still living with. The change was adopted when inflation was below target, as a hedge against the prior decade's undershoot. The framework's bias toward overshoot, in Warsh's account, set the foundation for the 2021-2022 surge. The measurement apparatus, core PCE, exclusion of food and energy, gave the committee a rough proxy for underlying inflation when a precise measure was needed. Warsh proposes a billion prices project developed with BLS, trimmed mean and median type measures that strip one-off movements and expose the generalized price change. Forward guidance anchored the committee to published forecasts. The dots and the summary of economic projections became commitments the committee was reluctant to abandon when the data turned. Warsh's phrase, "The Fed is human." Publishing the forecast made the forecast harder to update. The restoration requires a new framework, new measurement, and new communication. Warsh does not propose specific numbers. He proposes regime change in how policy is conducted. The framework review scheduled to conclude in 2026 is where that regime change would be written. A chair committed to overhauling the framework inherits substantial discretion over what the new framework says. The doctrinal claim is specific. The operational consequence is that the chair acquires the pen. Reclaim. The right scope of Fed activity would have been the statutory mandate: price stability, maximum employment, bank supervision within regulated perimeters, and payment systems. What occurred was expansion into climate scenario analysis, DEI initiatives, regional bank advocacy on policy questions outside monetary policy, and a 2020 rewriting of the mandate as a broad, inclusive goal. Language that accommodates objectives Congress did not assign. Warsh's examples were specific. The Minneapolis Fed lobbied publicly for an amendment to the Minnesota State Constitution on education. Regional reserve banks have published on DEI and on racial reparations. The Fed developed a climate scenario analysis program. From the Kevin Warsh, the Minneapolis Fed went publicly to lobby for an amendment to the state constitution education policy. How far beyond the remit can they get? Each represents, in Warsh's framing, drift into politically charged areas for which the Fed has neither authority nor expertise. The restoration requires retreat to the mandate. With politically neutral supervision, regional banks that publish on monetary and financial matters rather than on state policy, and a longer-run goal statement that narrows rather than broadens the committee's stated ambitions. Every activity Warsh names as remit exceeding has also been publicly opposed by the current administration. The doctrinal objection is stated in institutional terms. The activities at issue are ones the appointer wants dismantled for reasons of his own. Retreat.
The right use of the balance sheet would have been as a crisis-only monetary instrument, deployed when interest rates are pinned at zero, composed of short-duration assets, withdrawn when the crisis passes. What occurred was normalization. The balance sheet grew from roughly $800 billion in 2007 to nearly $9 trillion at peak and sits near $7 trillion today. From the Kevin Warsh, the big balance sheet has become an ordinary recurring force and has been quite unhelpful and is part of the reason why the Fed is in the business of politics. Warsh went further in the same exchange. A balance sheet of this size, holding long-dated treasury and agency paper, is fiscal policy in disguise. The Fed, he said, needs to get out of the fiscal business and focus on the monetary business. Two departures, in his account, explain the drift. First, the balance sheet has been used outside crisis conditions. Warsh asserts that the 2008 committee understood the instrument as exceptional, deployable only when rates were at zero, to be unwound when rates could carry monetary policy on their own. The normalization of an extraordinary tool into an ordinary one violates that understanding. Second, the balance sheet's composition places the Fed inside fiscal operations. Holding long-dated treasuries and agency mortgage-backed securities at scale reduces the cost of federal debt issuance and subsidizes mortgage credit. Warsh's phrase is that this is fiscal policy in disguise. The monetary fiscal boundary exists for a reason. When the Fed crosses it, the Fed becomes political, because fiscal policy is political by nature. A third feature, implicit but distinct, concerns distributional effects. The balance sheet's transmission channel operates through asset prices. Those who hold financial assets benefit disproportionately. Interest rates, by contrast, get in the cracks. They affect the whole economy, broadly distributed across households and firms. Warsh treats this as a matter of fairness, not only efficacy. The restoration requires reduction, slow, publicly deliberated, coordinated with Treasury on debt management, back toward a balance sheet that holds short-duration assets at a scale consistent with reserve management rather than with fiscal support. A smaller balance sheet that withdraws fiscal support from Treasury issuance is also, in the current fiscal configuration, a balance sheet that forces the Treasury into a different market posture and gives the Fed leverage over fiscal authorities that the current Fed does not possess. The instrument discipline is monetary. The institutional consequence is political. The qualification. Warsh's claim about himself is that his record across 2006 to 2011 at the board and across the 15 subsequent years at Hoover and in public writing is one of continuous, correct diagnosis. He warned on GSEs before the crisis. He identified the banking system as systematically undercapitalized inside the March 2008 committee, a diagnosis the archive confirms. In 2018, he publicly argued that the Fed's tightening into market stress was a mistake. His financial conduct, divestiture above the minimum required by the Office of Government Ethics, places credibility above personal interest. The right preparation for the chairmanship, as he presents it, combines institutional experience during crisis, a documented analytical record across cycles, and ethical discipline in the transition. His claim is that his record meets this standard. The architecture. Read at the top, the doctrine is a five-pillar restorationist program, four operational pillars and a chair's qualification, standing on a normative premise about conditional independence. The four pillars interconnect. AI as supply shock, recognize, makes framework reform, repair, both urgent and feasible. Framework reform is itself an instance of mandate reclamation, reclaim. Mandate reclamation requires withdrawing the balance sheet, retreat, from the fiscal operations that drew the Fed outside its remit in the first place. Each pillar is a consequence of the pillar before it.
The pillars require each other. If AI is not the supply shock, Warsh claims, the case for rate accommodation under above-target inflation collapses. If independence is statutory rather than conditional, the normalization of presidential pressure becomes an argument against the chair rather than for his posture. If the 2020 framework was not causal, the framework critique reduces to preference. Each pillar depends on the others to hold its load. This is what it means to say Warsh came with a program rather than with positions. Programs have load-bearing structure, positions do not. Confirmation hearings rarely produce programs. They produce performances, commitments, deflections, and clarifications. What Warsh delivered, across 2.5 hours of mixed questioning, compresses cleanly because it was written before it was delivered. In 15 years of Hoover papers, op-eds, and speeches, elaborating the doctrine against a consensus he did not join. The hearing was the doctrine's operational debut, not its first draft. Two readings. The doctrine's coherence is real. Its timing is also real. Warsh was nominated by a president who had publicly demanded rate cuts, publicly attacked the sitting chair, and publicly threatened a sitting governor. Each of the four pillars, stated in its own institutional language, produces an outcome the appointer has publicly asked for. The observation is not derived, it is what appears when the pillars are laid beside the appointer's stated preferences. Two readings of the alignment are consistent with the hearing record. Neither can be adjudicated from the hearing alone. Reading A. Coincidence. The doctrine is intellectually correct on its own terms, developed over 15 years of serious writing, and happens to match what the current president wants because the current president's demands on the Fed happen to be correct demands. Warsh's selection reflects the convergence of independently valid positions. The doctrine was not shaped by the appointment recognized the doctrine. Reading B. Convergence. The doctrine's specific features, conditional independence, normalized executive pressure, narrowed mandate, balance sheet retreat, are the features that make the doctrine selectable by an appointer who wants rate cuts, wants the sitting chair's protection of Governor Cook abandoned, wants regulatory retreat from climate and DEI, and wants a Fed posture that does not resist executive pressure. The doctrine existed before the appointment, but its shape is what made this nominee viable for this appointer. The doctrine does not cause the alignment. It also does not resist it. Warren, Reed, and Gallego each tried to surface the question during their 5-minute rounds and failed. The doctrine's coherence is its own defense in the 5-minute format. The question cannot be answered by argument. It can be answered only by what the chairmanship produces. What would distinguish the readings? The two readings imply different observable trajectories. Over the next 12 to 24 months, specific events will distinguish them. The four pillars provide the measuring instrument. The framework review scheduled to conclude in 2026 is the first test. Reading A predicts a substantive revision that narrows the reaction function, discarded fate asymmetry, tightened language on shortfall versus deviation, restoration of preemptive capacity. Regardless of whether the current inflation situation argues for easier or tighter policy. Reading B predicts framework language that accommodates whatever rate path the executive is demanding, with reform rhetoric mapped onto whichever direction is politically convenient. The balance sheet path is the second test. Reading A predicts measured, publicly deliberated reduction on a multi-year trajectory, consistently directional toward a smaller, short-duration balance sheet and toward composition that withdraws fiscal support from Treasury issuance, even in periods when the administration would prefer looser financial conditions. Reading B predicts a balance sheet posture that follows rate policy and Treasury convenience, reduction when it helps the administration's inflation narrative, pause when the administration wants financial conditions eased, composition choices calibrated to debt management needs rather than to monetary discipline.
The third test is the framing premise itself. How does Warsh respond when executive pressure collides with committee judgment? The Powell precedent is instructive. When pressed on rate decisions, on the renovation probe, on Governor Cook's tenure, Powell articulated the protective independence position. Reading A predicts Warsh would do the same. The performance independence doctrine, held consistently, requires the chair to defend the committee against pressure that compromises the mandate. Reading B predicts Warsh would defer to the executive on questions his doctrine classifies as outside the mandate: personnel, supervision, framework scope. And the practical result would be an executive-aligned Fed, even as the doctrinal language remains restorationist. Each observation is specific. Each is public. Each will accumulate across the chairmanship. What remains? The four pillars are not a prediction. They are a measuring instrument. Warsh delivered a program that hangs together intellectually. The program's pillars are the standard against which the chairmanship can be measured, because they are the standard the nominee himself articulated. Under Reading A, the chairmanship produces a reformer's Fed. Narrower in scope, smaller in balance sheet, newly calibrated on measurement and communication, holding its positions consistently across political weather. Under Reading B, the doctrinal language remains, but the operational pattern tracks executive preferences, and the doctrine's flexibility becomes the site where institutional capture occurs without any single visible break. The difference is not rhetorical. It is observable. The framework review will conclude. The balance sheet will move on some trajectory. The climate and DEI programs will either retreat on principled grounds or on the administration's timeline. The next governor removal attempt, whether against Cook, her replacement, or a future dissenter, will or will not find the chair defending his colleague. The word independence was spoken 34 times on April 21, 2026. The hearing produced the doctrine by which independence is to be measured. The doctrine is Warsh's. What the chairmanship produces will say whose purposes the doctrine served. This has been the Monetary Blog from the FOMC Insight Engine at causalityineconomics.com.